Okay, everybody. And now we're going to chant. And tonight we'll chant Lalasamayi, which is Guranga Balite Habi Pulaka Sharir Hari Hari Balite Nayane Bhave Nir. So, good to see everybody. And when everyone's here, I'll explain the thing on my head so we don't get any freakouts.
Thank you.
Acharya, or Sutta, Satishi, Shimad, His Divine Grace, Abhaya Chananada Bhaktivedanta Gosami, Srila Prabhupada Kijai, ISKCON Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Kijai, Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Kijai, Namacharya, Srila Huila Thakur Kijai, Prem Sekaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Rabu Nityananda Shidwita Kadadha Shivasiddhi Gaur Bhakta Vrindagijai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopagopadan Sayamakunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Maturadam Kijai Jagannathasami Kijai Yumanamai Kijai Shimadi Kalasi Devi Kijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrindagijai Gaura Premananda, Hari Hari Bol. All glorious to the assembled devotees, all glorious to the assembled devotees, all glorious to the assembled devotees, all glorious to Shri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Kijai, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasthaya Buddhale, Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tunamani, Namaste, Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Pacharani, Nibhashesha, Shunya Vadi, Paschacha Dejatarani. So let me read the translation. When will that opportune moment come to me when I shiver upon chanting the name of Lord Gauranga? When will I cry while chanting Hare Krishna? When will I receive the causeless mercy of Lord Nityananda so that my desires for material enjoyment become insignificant? When will my mind be purified of material anxieties and desires so that I can understand Vrindavana? When shall I be very eager to study the books left by the six Goswamis so that I can understand the conjugal love of Radha and Krishna? The lotus feet of the six Goswamis are my only shelter. In constant separation from them, I remain Narottamadas, Narottamadas Thakur. So, of course, if you want to achieve that particular stage, you simply have to think of Krishna's pleasure. Simply have to think of Krishna's pleasure. I was thinking about this today, that actually two realizations. When I was chanting my japa this morning, I just thought, I just have to absorb myself in Krishna's name and not think that I am the enjoyer. Krishna is the enjoyer. And then I heard some very interesting memory, Srila Prabhupada memory at that particular point, which really inspired me. Prabhupada was walking with one devotee, and the devotee said to Prabhupada, "That was an ecstatic kirtan." And then Prabhupada said to him, "Don't you understand that you are not the enjoyer? Kirtan is meant for Krishna's enjoyment." I mean, we should remember that during the kirtan. I mean, oftentimes, we may be chanting and just thinking, you know, how nice it is to float in Krishna's name. And it is nice to float in Krishna's names. But the main thing is we are chanting for the pleasure of the deities and chanting for the pleasure of the holy name. And chanting deities, holy name, non different. And chanting to please Srila Prabhupada. Not simply to give ourselves pleasure. Of course, in that way we will be happy. But if we're just thinking, you know, that was an ecstatic, you know, that was an ecstatic kirtan, then there's nothing wrong with us. Not with the kirtan. Just think about it. Anyway, little food for thought tonight. how that we are meant for Krishna's enjoyment, not that Krishna is meant for our enjoyment. We are meant, and that is Radharani's mood, that we are meant for Krishna's enjoyment. And that's why we should not jump up and think that we're on a higher level of devotional service than we're actually at. If you try to jump up and think you're in a higher level of devotional service than you're actually at, then, woo, you fall down. Like Prabhupada said, big, big monkey, big, big belly, sail on jumping, melancholy. So, all right. On that happy note, Prabhus, Pralis, Swamis, Swaminis, let's continue with our study of the Krishna book. So, Omaganatu Varanda Shah Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshurun Miditam Yena Tasmai Shigalinam. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So I'm going to share the screen right now, and as I said, I'll explain. The bandage on my head is from a minor operation I had today to take away something that was growing on my head that wouldn't have been so auspicious for my future. So it was cut out completely. They did tests on it, and everything is gone. So very positive. It's just a very tiny thing, but the bandage is big. It'll be smaller tomorrow, so don't worry. Actually, you should worry about this material world. It is a very worrisome place because things can happen unlike you've ever experienced before. Of course, being in the Krishna consciousness movement, you know, we've experienced a lot of things. You know, we got basically the equivalent of a PhD in human psychology. So, let's go. So we're reading from chapter 9 in the Krishna book, which is one of my favorite chapters, which all the chapters are. And it's entitled, Mother Yashoda Binds Lord Krishna. Of course, this is the Damodar pastime. Once upon a time, seeing that her maidservant was engaged in different household duties, Mother Yashoda personally took charge of churning butter. And while she churned butter, she sang of the childhood pastimes of Krishna and enjoyed thinking of her son. The end of her sari was tightly wrapped while she churned, and on account of her intense love for her son, milk automatically dripped from her breast, which moved as she labored very hard, churning with two hands. The bangles and bracelets on her hands tinkled as they touched each other, and her earrings and breasts shook. There were drops of perspiration on her face, and the flower garland which was on her head scattered here and there. Before this picturesque sight, Lord Krishna appeared as a child, like a toddler. He felt hungry, and to increase his mother's love, he wanted her to stop churning. He indicated that her first business was to let him suck her breast, and then she could churn butter later. So actually, another thing probably is about churning butter, that if the ladies want to maintain their beauty throughout their life, they should churn butter. Not with an electric churn machine, but the way they did it. You know, churning back and forth. They would put like a rope around a churn rod, and the churn rod would be in the pot of cream, and then they would back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and people got natural exercise. They didn't need to go to the gym at that point. Mother Yashoda took her son on her lap and pushed the nipple of her breast into his mouth, and while Krishna was sucking the milk and smiling, she was enjoying the beauty of her child's face. Suddenly the milk, which was on the stove, began to boil over. Just to stop the milk from spilling, Mother Yashoda at once put Krishna aside and went to the stove. Left in that state by his mother, Krishna became very angry, and his lips and eyes became red in rage. He bit his lips with his teeth, and taking up a piece of stone, he immediately broke the butter pot. He took butter out of it and with false tears in his eyes began to eat the butter in a secluded place. In the meantime, Mother Yashoda returned to the churning place after setting the overflowing milk pan in order. She saw the broken pot in which the churning yogurt had been kept. Since she could not find her boy, she concluded that the broken pot was his work. She smiled as he thought, "This child is very clever. After breaking the pot, he has left this place fearing punishment." After she saw it all over, she found her son sitting on a big wooden grinding mortar which was kept upside down. He was taking butter from a pot which was hanging from the ceiling on a swing, and he was feeding it to the monkeys. She saw Krishna looking this way and that way in fear of her because he was conscious of his naughty behavior. After seeing her son so engaged, she very silently approached him from behind. Krishna, however, saw her coming toward him with a stick in her hand, and he immediately got down from the grinding mortar and began to flee in fear. Mother Yashoda chased him to all corners, trying to capture the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was never approached even by the expert meditations of great yogis. In other words, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, who was never caught by the yogis and speculators, was playing just like a little child for such a great devotee as Mother Yashoda. Mother Yashoda, however, could not easily catch the fast-running child because of her thin waist and heavy body. Still, she tried to follow him as fast as possible. Her hair loosened, and the flowers in her hair fell to the ground. Although she was tired, she somehow reached her naughty child and captured him. When he was caught, Krishna was almost to the point of crying. He smeared his hands over his eyes, which were anointed with black eye cosmetics. The child saw his mother's face, while she stood over him, and his eyes became restless from fear. And, of course, they say, Krishna is feared by fear personified, and yet Krishna was afraid of Mother Yashoda. This is an amazing, inconceivable aspect of his pastimes. Mother Yashoda could understand that Krishna was unnecessarily afraid, and for his benefit she wanted to allay his fears. Being the topmost well-wisher of her child, Yashoda thought, "If the child is too fearful of me, I do not know what will happen to him." Mother Yashoda then threw away her stick. In order to punish him, she thought to bind his hands with some ropes. She did not know the power of her child, or that it was actually impossible for her to bind the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mother Yashoda was thinking that Krishna was her tiny child. She did not know that the child had no limitation. There is no inside or outside of him, nor beginning or end. He is unlimited and all-pervading. Indeed, he is himself the whole cosmic manifestation. Still, Mother Yashoda was thinking of Krishna as her child. Although he is beyond the reach of all senses, she endeavored to bind him to a wooden grinding mortar. But when she tried to bind him, she found that the rope she was using was too short, 2 inches. So she gathered more ropes from the house and added to it, but still she found the same shortage. In this way, she collected all the ropes available at home. But when the final knot was added, she saw that the rope was still 2 inches too short. Mother Yashoda was smiling, but she was astonished. How was it happening? In attempting to bind her son, she became tired. She was perspiring, and a garland on her head fell down. Then Lord Krishna appreciated the hard labor of his mother, and being compassionate upon her, he agreed to be bound up by the ropes. Krishna, playing as a human child in the house of Mother Yashoda, was performing his own selected pastimes. Otherwise, no one can control the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As the pure devotee surrenders himself unto the lotus feet of the Lord, who may either protect or vanquish the devotee forgets his subordinate position. Similarly, the Lord also feels transcendental pleasure by submitting himself to the protection of the devotee. This was exemplified by Krishna's surrender unto his mother, Yashoda. Krishna is the supreme bestower of all kinds of liberation to his devotees, but the benediction which was bestowed upon Mother Yashoda was never experienced even by Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva or the Goddess of Fortune. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is known as the son of Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, is never so completely known to the yogis and speculators, but he is easily available to his devotees. Nor is he appreciated as the supreme reservoir of all pleasure by the yogis and speculators. After binding her son, Mother Yashoda engaged herself in household affairs. At that time, bound up to the wooden mortar, Krishna could see a pair of trees before him, which were known as Arjuna trees. The great reservoir of pleasure, Lord Sri Krishna, thus thought to himself, Mother Yashoda, first of all, left without feeding me sufficient milk. and therefore I broke the pot of yogurt and distributed the stock butter in charity to the monkeys. Now she has bound me to a wooden mortar, so I shall do something more mischievous than before. And thus he thought of pulling down the two very tall Arjuna trees. There's a history behind the pair of Arjuna trees. In their previous lives, they had been the sons of Kubera, and their names were Nalakuvara and Manigriva. Fortunately, they later came within the vision of the Lord. In their previous lives, the great sage Narada had cursed them in order to bestow the highest benediction of seeing Lord Krishna. This benediction, curse, was bestowed upon them because of their forgetfulness due to intoxication. This story will be narrated in the next chapter. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 9th chapter of Krishna, Mother Yashoda binds Lord Krishna. And of course we'll go to the 10th chapter today. 10th chapter is entitled The Deliverance of Nalakuvara and Manigriva. Many devotees pronounce it as Nalakuvara. It's not Nalakuvara, it's Nalakuvara. Nalakuvara. Okay, got it. The story of the cursing of Nalakuvara and Manigriva and their deliverance by Krishna under the all-blissful desire of the great sage Narada is here described. The two great demigods, Nalakuvara and Manigriva, were sons of the treasurer of the demigods, Kubera, who was a great devotee of Lord Shiva. By the grace of Shiva, Kubera's material opulences had no limit. So one who is a devotee of Lord Shiva can become very, very wealthy. As a rich man's son often become addicted to wine and women, so these two sons of Kubera were also addicted to wine and sex. And you actually see this in America too, and all over the world, where you have these people with a lot of money. They can't remain faithful. I mean, not all of them, but 90% of them can't remain faithful to one wife or one husband. And they have so many illicit affairs. And, you know, they're just not stable, even though they may be very good in business. Once these two demigods, desiring to enjoy, entered the garden of Lord Shiva in the province of Kailasa, on the bank of the Mandakini Ganges. There they drank much and engaged in hearing the sweet singing of the beautiful women who accompanied them in that garden of fragrant flowers. In an intoxicated condition, the two demigods entered the water of the Ganges, which was filled with lotus flowers, and there they began to enjoy the company of the young girls exactly as a male elephant enjoys female elephants within the water. In other words, they were naked. While they were thus enjoying themselves in the water, all of a sudden, Narada, the great sage, happened to pass that way. He could understand that the demigods, Nalakuvara and Manigriva, were too much intoxicated and could not even see that he was passing. The young girls, however, were not so much intoxicated as the demigods, and they once became ashamed of being naked before the great sage Narada and covered themselves with all haste. The two demigod sons of Kuvera were so much intoxicated that they could not appreciate the presence of the sage Narada and therefore did not cover their bodies. In other words, they were completely naked in front of Narada Muni. Prabhupada said when he visited a nudist colony, he said they'll become trees in the next life. And this is exactly what happened with these two personalities. On seeing the two demigods so degraded by intoxication, Narada desired their welfare, and therefore he exhibited his causeless mercy upon them by cursing them. Because the great sage was compassionate upon them, he wanted to finish their false enjoyment of intoxication and association with young girls and wanted them to see Lord Krishna face to face. He conceived of cursing them as follows. He said that the attraction for material enjoyment is due to the increase in the mode of passion. A person in the material world, when favored by the material opulence of riches, generally becomes addicted to three things. Intoxication, sex, and gambling. Materially opulent men, being puffed up with the accumulation of wealth, also become so merciless that they indulge in killing animals by opening slaughterhouses, and they think that they themselves will never die. Such foolish persons, forgetting the laws of nature, become overly infatuated with the body. They forget that the material body, even though very much advanced in civilization up to the position of the demigods, will finally turn into ashes or stool. You know, everything we're proud of will turn like that. Or while one is living, whatever the external condition of the body may be, within there is only stool, urine, and various kinds of worms. Thus being engaged in jealousy and violence to other bodies, materialists cannot understand the ultimate goal of life, and without knowing this goal of life, they generally glide down to a hellish condition in their next life. Such foolish persons commit all kinds of sinful activities on account of the temporary body, and they are even unable to consider whether the body actually belongs to them. Generally, it is said that the body belongs to the persons who feed it. One might therefore consider whether the body belongs to one's person, one personally, or to the master to whom one renders service. The master of slaves claims full right to the bodies of slaves because the master feeds the slaves. It may also be questioned whether the body belongs to the father, who is the seed-giving master of the body, or to the mother, who develops the child's body in her womb. Foolish persons are engaged in committing all sorts of sins due to the misconception of identifying the material body with the self. But one should be intelligent enough to understand to whom the body belongs. A foolish person indulges in killing animals to maintain the body, but he does not consider whether the body belongs to him or to his father or to mother or maternal grandfather. Sometimes the father gives his daughter in charity to a person with a view of getting back the daughter's child as a son. The body may also belong to a stronger man who forces it to work for him. Sometimes a slave's body is sold to a master, and from that day on, the body belongs to the master. And at the end of life, the body belongs to the fire, because the body is given to the fire and burned to ashes. Or the body is thrown into the street to be eaten by the dogs and vultures. Of course, those are parshis. Sometimes probably would say the parshis, they actually throw the dead body from a tower, and then the body is eaten by usually vultures. And sometimes dogs. This very same thing that we're so attached to, we're decorating, we're putting jewelry on. Well, not me, I'm not wearing jewelry. This thing we're so attached to. Phew. Before committing all kinds of sins to maintain the body, one should understand to whom the body belongs. Ultimately, it is concluded that the body is a product of material nature, and at the end, it merges into material nature. Therefore, the conclusion should be that the body belongs to material nature. One should not wrongly think that the body belongs to him. To maintain a false possession, why should one indulge in killing? Why should one kill innocent animals to maintain the body? And ultimately, of course, we understand Krishna is the owner of material nature, and therefore Krishna is the owner of the body. What is that? Ishavasham idam sabham yakincha jagatam jagatena jagatena bunjatam agrihakashasvidyaname. Krishna is the owner of everything, and Krishna gives us some quota, like this body, or our talents, or money, or other types of opulence. When a man is infatuated with a false prestige of opulence, he does not care for any moral instruction, but indulges in wine, women, and animal killing. In such circumstances, a poverty-stricken man is often better situated, because a poor man thinks of himself in relation to other bodies. A poor man often does not wish to inflict injuries upon other bodies, because he can understand more readily that when he himself is injured, he feels pain. Therefore, the great sage Narada considered that because the demigods Nalakuvara and Manigriva were so infatuated by false prestige, they should be put into a condition of life devoid of opulence, because that's the tree body. A person who has a pinprick in his body does not wish others to be pricked by pins. A considerate man in the life of poverty does not wish others to also be put into that condition. Generally, it is seen that one who has risen from a poverty-stricken life and becomes wealthy creates some charitable institution at the end of his life so that other poverty-stricken men might be benefited. A compassionate poor man may consider others' pains and pleasures with empathy. A poor man is seldom puffed up with false pride, and he may be freed from all kinds of infatuation. He may remain satisfied by whatever he gets for his maintenance by the grace of the Lord. To remain in the poverty-stricken condition is a kind of austerity. According to Vedic culture, therefore, the Brahmanas, as a matter of routine, keep themselves in a poverty-stricken condition to save themselves from the false prestige of material opulence. False prestige, due to advancement of material prosperity, is a great impediment for spiritual emancipation. A poverty-stricken man cannot become unnaturally fat by eating more and more, on an account of not being able to eat more than he requires, his senses are not very turbulent. When the senses are not very turbulent, he cannot become violent. So, of course, we know from the Nectar of Instruction, which we read previously, you know, you eat, it applies pressure and gives you protein, and you get violent and lusty. Another advantage of poverty is that a saintly person can easily enter a poor man's house, and thus a poor man can take advantage of the saintly person's association. A very opulent man does not allow anyone to enter his house, therefore the saintly person cannot enter. According to the Vedic system, a saintly person takes the position of a mendicant, so that on the plea of begging something from the householder, he can enter any house. The householder, who has usually forgotten everything about spiritual advancement because he is busy maintaining family affairs, can be benefited by the association of saintly persons. There is a great chance for a poor man to become liberated through association with a saint. Of what use are persons who are puffed up with material opulence and prestige if they are bereft of the association of saintly persons and devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? The great sage Narada thereafter thought that it was his duty to put those demigods into a condition where they could not be falsely proud of the material opulence and prestige. Narada was compassionate and wanted to save them from their fallen life. They were in the mode of darkness, and being therefore unable to control their senses, they were addicted to sex life. It was the duty of a saintly person like Narada to save them from their abominable condition. In animal life, the animal has no sense to understand that he is naked. But Kuvera was the treasure of the demigods, a very responsible man, and Nalakuvera and Manigriva were two of his sons. And yet they became so animalistic and irresponsible that they could not understand, due to intoxication, that they were naked. To cover the lower part of the body is a principle of human civilization, and when men or women forget this principle, they become no better than animals. Narada, therefore, thought that the best punishment for them was to make them non-moving living entities, or trees. The trees are, by nature's law, unmoving. Although trees are covered by the mode of ignorance, they cannot do harm. The great sage Narada thought it fitting that, although the brothers would be punished to become trees, by his mercy they would continue to keep their memory and be able to know why they were being punished. And that's a pretty heavy punishment, that you remember why you're being punished while you're standing for hundreds of years, not able to move, not able to eat, enduring all sorts of different weather patterns and being conscious. An ordinary tree is not that conscious. It's like sleeping all the time. But imagine the punishment Manigriva and Nalakuvera had to undergo. It's a really heavy punishment. It's more than simply being punished to be trees. After changing the body, a living entity generally forgets his previous life. But in special cases, by the grace of the Lord, as with Nalakuvera and Manigriva, one can remember. Sage Narada therefore contemplated that the two demigods should remain for 100 years in the time of the demigods in the form of trees. That's millions of years, actually, by earth calculation. And after that, they would be fortunate enough to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face by his causeless mercy. And thus they would again be promoted to the life of the demigods and become great devotees of the Lord. After this, the great sage Narada returned to his abode known as Narayanashrama. And the two demigods turned into trees known as twin Arjuna trees. The two demigods were favored by the causeless mercy of Narada and given a chance to grow in Nanda's courtyard and see Lord Krishna face to face. Although child Krishna was bound up to the wooden mortar, he began to proceed toward the twin trees in order to fulfill the prophecy of his great devotee Narada. Lord Krishna knew that Narada was his great devotee and that the trees standing before him as twin Arjuna trees were actually the sons of Kuvera. "I must now fulfill the words of my great devotee Narada," he thought. Then he proceeded through the passage between the two trees. Although he was able to pass through the passage, the large wooden mortar stuck horizontally between the trees, taking advantage of this with great strength, Lord Krishna began to pull the rope, which was tied to the mortar. As soon as he pulled, the two trees, with all their branches and limbs, fell down immediately with a great sound. Out of the broken fallen trees came two great personalities, shining like blazing fire. All sides became illuminated and beautiful by their presence. The two purified personalities immediately came before Child Krishna and bowed down to offer their respects and prayers in the following words. And now we get into the prayers of Mandriva Navath Kuvara. Dear Lord Krishna, you are the original personality of Godhead, master of all mystic powers. Learned Brahmanas know very well that this cosmic manifestation is an expansion of your potencies, which are sometimes manifest and sometimes unmanifest. You are the original provider of the life, body, and senses of all living entities. You are the eternal God. Lord Vishnu is all-pervading, the imperishable controller of everything, and you are eternal time. You are the original source of the cosmic manifestation, which is acting under the spell of the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. You are living as the super soul in all the multi forms of living entities, that's Shri Rudrakshaya Vishnu. And you know very well what is going on with their bodies and minds. Therefore, you are the supreme director of all activities of all living entities. But although you are in the midst of everything which is under the spell of the material modes of nature, you are not affected by such contaminated qualities. No one under the jurisdiction of the material modes can understand your transcendental qualities which existed before the creation. Therefore, you are called the Supreme Transcendence. Let us offer our respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of you, Lord Vasudeva, the Supreme Brahman, who are always glorified by your personal internal potencies. So you see, they actually got intelligence from Krishna to offer Krishna prayers. Very, very interesting. In this material world, you make yourself known only by your different incarnations. Although you assume different types of bodies, these bodies are not part of the material creation. They are always full of transcendental potencies of unlimited opulence, strength, beauty, fame, wisdom, and renunciation. Those are the opulences of God. And Krishna's body is always the same body, and it's Satchidananda, eternity, bliss, and knowledge. In the material existence, there's a difference between the body and the owner of the body. That's right. There's a difference between Kshetra and Kshetrakya. But because you appear in your original spiritual body, there's no such difference for you. When you appear, your uncommon activities indicate that you are the Supreme Personality of God. And such uncommon activities are not possible for anyone in material existence. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead caused the birth and death as well as the liberation of the living entities, and you are full with all your plenary expansions. Plenary means they're all Vishnu Tattva expansions. All the same person. You can bestow on everyone all kinds of benedictions. O Lord, O source of auspiciousness and goodness, we offer our respectful obeisances unto you. You are the all-pervading Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Source of Peace, and the Supreme Personality in the dynasty of King Yadu. O Lord, our Father, known as Kuvera, the demigod is your servant. Similarly, the great sage Narada is also your servitor, and only by their grace have we been able to see you personally. We therefore pray that we may always be engaged in your transcendental, loving service by speaking only about your glories and hearing about your transcendental activities. May our hands and other limbs be engaged in your service and our minds always be concentrated at your lotus feet and our heads always bow down before the all-pervading universal form of your lordship. So they were actually worshiping Krishna in the mood of awe and reverence, not of intimacy. So they were not ready to remain in Vrindavan. They were talking about the universal form, which Arjuna didn't want to see. When the demigods Nalakuvara and Manigriva finished their prayers, the child Lord Krishna, the master and proprietor of Gokula, bound to the wooden grinding mortar by the ropes of Yashoda, smiled and said, "It was already known to me that my great devotee Narada Muni had shown his causeless mercy by saving you from the abominable condition of pride due to possessing extraordinary beauty and opulence in a family of demigods. He has saved you from gliding down to the lowest condition of hellish life. All these facts are already known to me. You are very fortunate because not only were you cursed by him, but you had the great opportunity to see him. If someone is able by chance to see face to face a great saintly person like Narada, who is always serene and merciful to everyone, then immediately that conditioned soul becomes liberated. This is exactly like being situated in the full light of the sun. There cannot be any visionary impediment. Therefore, O Nalakuvara and Manigriva, your lives have now become successful because you have developed ecstatic love for me. Now you can go back to your father's residence in the heavenly planets, and by remaining in the attitude of devotional service, you will be liberated in this very life. After this, the demigods circumambulated the Lord many times and bowed down before him again and again, and thus they left. The Lord remains bound up with ropes to the grinding mortar. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 10th chapter of Krishna, the deliverance of Nalakuvara and Manigriva. So we got through two chapters tonight, and we're going to end a little bit early because I had another conference on the hour. So what I'm going to do is take questions right now, and tomorrow we'll go on to chapter 11. So we did 9 and 10 today. Very ecstatic. Enjoyable. It gives Krishna enjoyment that we're hearing and chanting about his glories. So I am allowing you to unmute yourselves. So raise your hand or unmute yourselves and ask a question or type in the chat window. You have your opportunity now. So, going once. Does anyone have a question? Or a comment? Or a correction? Or a philosophical point? Okay,
Hare Krishna Gurudev, please accept my respectful obeisances. Okay. Gurudev, in the purport here, we just read that people in ignorance are harmless, but we are more scared of people who are in ignorance in terms of alcoholics or how are they harmless?
Well, people who are completely in ignorance are harmless. People who are mixed ignorance with some passion, they're very harmful. So, you know, it just depends on like the percentage of ignorance and the percentage of passion. Obviously, if someone's completely in ignorance, they're like a tree, they're just asleep. It's like a drunk person who just like falls asleep. That's almost completely in ignorance. So, you know, the modes of nature are, let's say there's combinations and permutations of the different modes of nature. So the tree is 99% of the mode of ignorance. No, it's not a question of lazy ignorance versus active ignorance. It's a question that of the combination of the modes of nature. It's like different colors. Like you have something that's completely black and they're just like gray, you know, like that. So, you know, just that's just, you know, when we say someone's in ignorance, it means they're predominantly in ignorance. But if they're 100% in ignorance, they're probably dead. Okay?
Thank you, Gurudev. Thank you.
How old was Krishna? That's an interesting question. I forget right now. I think he was about 4 or 5. Actually, he was crawling, so he was younger than that. So he was a toddler. He was crawling. I forget the exact age that Krishna was. Maybe someone remembers. But he was crawling. He wasn't walking. So, any other questions or comments? That's the Damodar Pastime, which we celebrate during the month of Damodar, during the month of Kartik. And every day we chant the prayers by Satyavrata Muni. Namam Vishwaram Satya Anandarupam Vasakundalam. Like that. And We're looking forward to Kartik. Wherever we may be during Kartik, I have no idea this year, because there's a lot of changes this year in life in general. My life and the life of the world. So, anyway, so on that happy note, we're going to see everybody tomorrow. And we'll end a little early because we have this conference on the hour. Thank you very much. We finished two chapters today, chapter 9 and 10. Tomorrow we go to chapter 11. All glorious to His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hari Bol.